So we will discuss today this weekly Gita program in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita, as the name suggests, Gita is a song. Bhagavad is by God or of God. So the Bhagavad Gita is the song of God. And it is a song, a poetic philosophical compilation, composition that addresses the fundamental question that confronts all living beings sooner or later. That question is, what is life meant for? What am I meant to do in my life? Most of us, we go through our lives guided, shaped, influenced by various factors, external and internal. Sometimes society tells us, okay, choose this career, do this kind of education, get this kind of job. We may follow that trajectory. Or sometimes our own mind may tell us, hey, come on, this looks good. Let me get this. Let me acquire this. Let me have this. And in this way, we go through our lives. While going through our lives in this way, sooner or later, we face the situation which Arjuna, the student in the Bhagavad Gita, faced. He speaks this in the first chapter, 30th verse. Nacha shreyo nu pashyami. He says, I cannot see any long-term good in whatever I am doing. He says that, nimittani cha pashyami viparitani keshava. He says in first chapter 30th verse that whatever I do, I am seeing only reversals. I am seeing only misfortune. So in today's terminology, he is saying that I am facing a lose-lose situation. Whatever I do, that doesn't seem to be any way ahead for me. So his specific situation was that he had to fight a war. And because on the opposite side were his relatives, his venerable relatives, many of them, he felt, I can't fight against them. And thinking thus, he decided that I will not fight. So he had his bow, which he had raised, ready to fight. But on seeing his relatives, he felt, I cannot fight against them. And he put aside his bow. So the first Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters. And the first chapter ends with Arjuna putting aside his bow. Visrujyasasharam japam shokasam vignamanasaha visrujya. He put aside his bow. Sasharam japam, bow and arrow. Shokasam vigna, being filled with dejection, being filled with indecision, being filled with lamentation. So now what followed was not just a pep call, come on, cheer up man, fight. If the Bhagavad Gita had just been a call to a disheartened warrior to fight a war, it would not have resonated for millennia, for millions across dozens of civilizations and cultures. When Arjuna at this time stops fighting, he doesn't just expect, should I fight or should I not fight? He doesn't ask that question alone. He asks, Pruchhami tvam dharma sammoodha chetaha. I want to know, what is dharma? The word dharma often has a religious connotation, but the way it is used in the Bhagavad Gita is a universal implication. Dharma means, what is our nature? Dharma is the process of harmonizing with our nature. Water is naturally liquid. Fire is naturally hot. The sun naturally gives heat and light. And these are the natural states of these corresponding objects. Similarly, do we all have a natural state? And is there any way by which we can harmonize with our natural state? that process of harmonizing with our natural state is dharma. And because this is a question that all of us get sometime or another. We feel that sometimes when we are in an uncomfortable relationship, an incompatible relationship, we feel, I'm in the wrong place. I shouldn't be here. That may happen with not just a relationship. That can happen with a job. That can happen with a whole way of life. So we all want to be in a situation that seems natural, that is comfortable. A situation where we feel at home. So we often spend a lot of energy, money and thought in building homes for our body. We want to have a good house to stay. And this is important. But if our heart does not have a shelter, then we can be homeless at home. We may be home physically, but we can be lost internally. We can be homeless. So when we talk about being situated in our nature, that is not just about eating natural food or living in a natural setting. All these are good. But it is of being in a natural state of being internally. And the process by which we can attain that natural state of being, that process is dharma. So, the Bhagavad Gita's universal appeal is because it deals with this time-independent question of the human heart. That question is, how can I live in harmony with my nature? Socrates, across another civilization, the Greek civilization, he said, know thyself. Know thyself. So now what does this mean? Now we know, we go the whole process of education, when we go to school and study, and the purpose is to know. But quite often, we come to know about external things. Once a group of 10 friends came from a rural place to a urban place. And there was a 100-story skyscraper building. And in this 100-story skyscraper building, they went up, they stayed at, they got a room on the 100th story. They came down, went for outing in the city. When they came back, they found, to their dismay, that there was no power. So now, there was no, the elevator had no power to take them up. So they had to climb up 100 floors. They looked at each other, a daunting process. And one of them got an idea. He said, let us all tell each other stories. And each of us can tell a story that lasts for up to 10 floors while we are climbing. And like that, there are 10 of us. We can entertain ourselves, take our mind off the ardor of climbing up to the 100 stories. They said, fine. The first person started. The story went up to 10 floors. Second person went on. So some people told longer stories. So by the time they came to the 99th level, 99th floor, the last person's turn had come. So please tell your story. He said, no, I can't tell my story. It's a tragedy. I said, no, no, tell your story. It doesn't matter. He says, break your heart. I can't tell your story. I can't tell my story. Now come on, tell. Everybody is prompting him. Finally, he came right in front of the door. And then he said, now I have to tell you my story. My story is, I have forgotten the key downstairs. I have forgotten the key downstairs. The whole point of climbing up is to get to the room. But if we're so busy climbing up, that we forget that after climbing there, there is something that we need, without which the whole climb becomes pointless. So similarly, in our life, we climb up various ladders. We climb up the social ladder where we get more and more respectable positions. We may climb up an economic ladder where we earn more and more money. We climb up the educational ladder where we get better and better degrees. And all this climb can lead to growth. But there is something fundamental which is required. That is the key. And the key is the art of finding inner happiness. Unless we can find inner happiness, no matter how much we climb up, we will not be happy. We can, if whatever talents we have, we need to do justice to those talents. And the Bhagavad Gita actually invites us to act according to our nature and to fulfill our potential. At the same time, it tells us that Sukhena Brahma Samsparsham Atyantam Sukham Ashnute. The 6th chapter, 27th verse, Krishna says that when we turn inwards, when we understand and experience spiritual reality, Brahma Samsparsha, at that time, Atyantam Sukham Ashnute, we experience the supreme happiness. So to the extent we are internally satisfied, to that extent we can be positive contributors externally. Internal satisfaction, it gives us a stable foundation by which we can perform externally. Suppose somebody has to dance, and there are special dancing floors where people can perform expertly and dance. Now suppose, instead of a very conducive dancing floor, there is instead a very slippery, jerky, uncomfortable floor. Then the dancer, more than half of the energy will go in just staying afoot. And dancing will become much more difficult. So the foundation is vital for dancing well. Similarly, our inner stability, our inner satisfaction is the foundation that enables us to perform externally. Without that inner satisfaction, whatever we do, that will, if we have talent, if we have temperament, there may be achievement in our life. But that achievement will not be sustainable. Martin Luther King said that we live in an age of guided missiles and misguided men. Guided missiles. We have climbed up the ladder of technological progress. And of course, he was almost half a century ago. At that time, there were missiles. Now, there are far more devastating weapons. And they can be guided with far greater precision. But still, the other part of it, misguided men. We have people who, there was just maybe a couple of months ago, there was this airplane in Europe. The air pilot, he had a desire, he was depressed and he wanted to die with a bang. So what did he do? He took this plane, perfectly normal plane, and just crashed into the ground. And all these people around with him died. And he had locked the co-pilot outside, nobody could do anything about it. Now we have no resource. Whenever people enter into airplane, they'll board an aircraft, there are so much security checks to ensure that there's no terrorists with bombs or no such dangerous items there. But what can we do if people have a bomb in their head? Now, if a pilot is carrying a bomb in the head, there's a self-destructive mentality which also becomes not just individually destructive but socially destructive. Then there is a blatant example of climbing up a ladder but missing out the key. One may become an expert pilot, but instead of flying people expertly, one destroys people expertly. These are, of course, these sort of sensationalist, eye-catching, jaw-dropping examples are horrible. They are sensational, but they are indicative of a fundamental malaise in society. The World Health Organization states that 1 million people commit suicide every year. 1 million people. And that is just the recorded number of suicides. So even when this recorded number, 1 million amounts to something like 40 suicides every second. It's a 40 suicides every 30 minutes, something like that. It's practically, since we started this talk, there are around 50 people who have committed suicide in different parts of the world. And this number of people committing suicide, 1 million, is actually greater than the number of people who are killed either in wars or in murders or in any violent crimes. That means more than the number of people who are killed by others are the number of people who are killing themselves. Why is that? So the WHO calls suicide a tragic social health problem for which there is no known cure. There is, of course, counseling can and should be given for people who tend to be suicidal. But there is a fundamental malaise. There is, as I said, well, there are people who may be in extreme physical pain because of which they may choose euthanasia. But most people who commit suicide, it is not just because they are in physical pain. It's just at that time, they feel their life has become pointless. That they have come to what Arjuna had come to, a lose-lose situation. That come to a point where there just doesn't seem to be any way ahead. Nimittani cha pashyami viparitani keshava. Whatever I do, things are only going to become worse. And when a person comes to that situation, then that person may feel it's better to end my life. What is the point of living like this? The Bhagavad Gita answers Arjuna's question by expanding his vision of his self. You know, our self runs deeper than the body, and our self runs longer than our lifespan. The Bhagavad Gita tells us that we are not just physical creatures. Yes, our body is a part of who we are. But at our core, our existence is beyond the body. We are spiritual beings. Essentially, the body, the hand or the eyes or even the brain is made of the same chemicals, of the same atoms and molecules that this mic is made up of, or this table is made, this desk is made up of. And yet, this mic or this desk, they are not conscious, whereas we are conscious. And consciousness is not something which matter can produce. Matter and consciousness are two distinct categories. And consciousness has a non-material source. Avinashitu tadviddhi yena sarvamidam tatam vinasham avyasyasya nakashchit kartum arhati. So in the Bhagavad Gita, 2nd chapter, 17th verse, Krishna states that avinashitu tadviddhi, that which pervades the whole body, O Arjuna, know that to be indestructible. And that is the consciousness. And consciousness is the energy of the soul. So, sometimes if people are, say, very passionate about certain sports. So, for example, say, here people are very passionate about soccer or about baseball. I come from India, where people are passionate about cricket. Just next to, below India, there is a small state, Sri Lanka. And Sri Lanka is also quite passionate about cricket. So, the Sri Lankan cricket team, in several tournaments, for 5 successive times, it came to the finals and lost in the finals. The 5th time, when it lost in the finals, something like several hundred people in Sri Lanka committed suicide. Why? Because they felt our favorite team has lost. So now, we say, okay, sports losing, why do you have to commit suicide? If your team has lost, it's lost. But what has happened is that the people's mind gets so attached, so caught, so obsessed in that sport. They feel, if my team is lost, what is the point of my life? Now, we may say, why would somebody do like this? But we can consider how misidentification can lead to misperception. Misidentification means Suppose people are watching a movie. Now, when people are watching movies, essentially, you know, when people say, I like a movie or I don't like a movie, there are various factors, but one of the factors is whether the spectators can connect with the characters in the movie or not. The spectators like the hero or like the heroine. So if they can connect, then they get caught in the movie. And say then the hero and hero are fighting and the villain punches the hero. And then people look back. Because they're identifying with the hero, they jerk back in shock. And when the hero and heroine embrace each other, people may whistle and cheer. So what is happening here? Here there's identification. Now when there's identification with something, there are emotions which are created. And suppose if a person is playing a virtual game in which, say a person is a car driver. The car is going across a bridge. And suddenly the bridge breaks. And the person falls to the car. The person is very absorbed in watching the video game. Just as a car driver falls to his death, the person will feel as if, oh, I have died. Although nothing has happened, the person, to the extent there is identification with what is being observed, to that extent, there is the emotional impact based on whatever is happening to the character with whom we are identifying. So the Bhagavad Gita explains, similarly, in the 13th chapter, 26th verse, Purusha prakriti sthohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sadasad yoni janmasu. So Purusha prakriti sthohi. We as souls are spiritual. We are indestructible. We are beyond the body. But we identify with the body. Our sense of self-worth gets locked in the body. And when that happens, when something goes wrong at the physical level, we feel as if things are collapsing for us. We have come to the end, our whole world is collapsing. So when Arjuna feels that he is confronted with a lose-lose situation, it's like say a person is watching a movie and that movie is going towards a tragedy where whatever the hero is going to do, the hero is going to die. So Krishna says, first thing is, know that it's a movie. It's not the reality. Understand your spiritual identity. So Albert Einstein said that problems cannot be solved at the same level of awareness that created the problems. So the Bhagavad Gita does not try to deal with Arjuna's problem. Should I fight? Should I not fight? The Bhagavad Gita says this is not the fundamental question you should be asking. The fundamental question you should be asking is, who are you? Understand that. It's like in mathematics, if you're doing a complex calculation, if you do the first step wrong, everything else that we may do, even if it is precisely done, the result will not come out right. The fundamental question, before we can understand our destiny, we have to understand our identity. And when we understand that we are spiritual beings, then we can deal with material ups and downs without undue frustration, without undue agitation. So now when I use the example of a movie, the Bhagavad Gita does not dismiss life in the world as false. We may say, okay, the movie is just a show, it has no reality to it. The Bhagavad Gita does not say that we should reject the world as if it is false. What it tells us is that we should not let the world consume our consciousness. We have to give the world our attention, but we should not give the world monopoly over our attention. We have a life that extends beyond the world. We have an existence which will go beyond. This is point birth, this is point death. Between them is our present life. But we as souls will continue to exist even after our death. And we had existed before we were born. So the end is actually not the end. The end is simply a transition. This long-term vision of life transforms Arjuna's perspective of looking at things. Arjuna is able to see things from a higher perspective. Suppose a person is caught, say, in a disaster hit area. Maybe there is a hurricane and a whole communication network, the electricity, the food supply, the water supply, everything has collapsed. Person is in a great panic. Maybe there is a nearby building which has caught fire. And now the person is in panic, not knowing what to do, feeling threatened. But then a rescue helicopter comes. And the rescue helicopter drops a rope. And this person is airlifted up. Now that person is still in the same area. But on being airlifted, that person no longer feels that sense of personal threat. Okay, there is fire, and if I can do something to extinguish the fire, I'll do that. But I am not immediately threatened. So same way, when we understand our spiritual identity, our consciousness becomes raised above our circumstances. So we can be concerned without being disturbed. We can be concerned. It's not that we are irresponsible. We just reject the whole world as false. That is not the Bhagavad Gita's message. The Bhagavad Gita tells Arjuna to act responsibly. But while telling him to act responsibly, the Bhagavad Gita tells him that a part of acting responsibly in the world is to not let the world consume us. If we get too obsessed in the things of the world, then we lose perspective. When we lose perspective, then we cannot act intelligently. We cannot act coherently. So, the spiritual connection, spiritual dimension of our life, which Bhagavad Gita reveals, that if we understand it, then our consciousness gets airlifted above our circumstances. And when it is airlifted thus, we may still face problems. But those problems, we can be concerned about them without being disturbed by them. And the Bhagavad Gita ends with Arjuna lifting up his bow. It ends with Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Partho Dhanurdhara Tatra Shreer Vijayo Bhutir Dhruvani Tirmatir Mama. It says that wherever there is Krishna, who is the supreme mystic, who is the supreme magician, Yogeshwara, and Yatra Partho Dhanurdhara. Partha is the name of Arjuna. Dhanurdhara, one who has picked up his bow. So where there is Krishna and Arjuna, there will be victory. So the point is, Arjuna has picked up his bow. So that bow which he had put down, dejected, by the end he has picked up the bow. So what does it mean? That bow represents our determination. When we face predicaments in life, we lose heart. We put down our metaphorical bows. We think, what is that? What can I do? There's no way ahead. We become dejected. But when we understand that there is a spiritual side to our life, and that spiritual side is indestructible, that is never affected by whatever happens on life's material side, then we can face whatever happens at the material level of reality without being unduly disturbed. And the spiritual reality is not just our own spiritual identity. Yes, that is one part of it. But another part of it is that we have a relationship of spiritual love with the Supreme Spiritual Being. And that spiritual being is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita to be Krishna. So, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partho Dhanurdhara. So, when we understand that there is God, who the Bhagavad Gita tells us that God's love for us is unconditional. There is nothing that anyone can ever do that can stop Krishna from loving them. He will always be there for us. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto. He's always there in our hearts. Closer than the closest person can ever be. Even when that person gives us the tightest hug. So Krishna is always there in our heart. And he always loves us. And the Bhagavad Gita doesn't just offer an abstract analysis. Oh, understand, you are not the body, you are the soul. It offers us a practical process for experiencing spiritual reality. And that process is the process of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga enables us to direct our love towards Krishna. So we were just singing the holy names before we started this talk. This singing is also yoga. And this is a part of Bhakti Yoga where we use sound. Just now we are discussing philosophy, by which we are using our intelligence to understand what is going on. So we use our intelligence to get some conception of our spiritual identity. But just as our intelligence can help elevate our understanding, similarly, the sound of mantras. Mantras are special sounds which act like elevators for our consciousness. So our consciousness, which is caught at the material level, if we chant mantras, if we sing mantras, if we meditate on the mantras, then our consciousness gets elevated upwards, upwards, upwards. And with us, like I said, we become airlifted. A refugee may get airlifted. Similarly, we become airlifted by the power of mantras. And we experience higher spiritual reality. We experience the spiritual love of God for each one of us. When we chant the mantras, when we were doing sitting kirtans, we can stand and sing and dance, and that all of that, when done prayerfully, accuses an experience of some higher reality. Now, when people say are blind, there are two kinds of blindness. I'll conclude with this point, then we can have some questions. There are two kinds of blindness. One is called congenital blindness, and the other is adventitious blindness. Congenital means these people are blind right from birth. They have never seen anything. And the other is adventitious blindness, where people had sight, but because of some reason they lost sight. Now, when people who have lost sight regain sight, they can make sense of the world. But people who are born blind from birth, and then after that, say they regain their sight, or not regain, they gain the sight for the first time, maybe because of some medical advances, because of some, say, someone donating eye or whatever. And when they gain their eyes, they gain the eyes, but they don't get comprehension. Now, there are videos which show, there is a carpenter. He has his tools, maybe he has his knife, he has his hammer, and he gets the eyes back, and he looks at the knife, he looks at the hammer, nothing makes sense. I read a first person account. He said that, you know, when the doctor first opened the bandage from my eyes, I looked at it, and all that I saw was just a confusing muddle of black and white colors. And then when I heard a voice from that, now because I knew that voices came from faces, so I thought, oh, this must be a face. And then the same video, it shows that when this person picks up, this carpenter sees a hammer, and what is this? I don't make sense. But as soon as he touches it, oh, this is a hammer. Okay, this is a part. And immediately he can work with it. So the point is that we don't see just by getting the eyes to see. We see when we get the intelligence to make sense of what we are seeing. So because those people who have got their eyes for the first time, they have had no previous experience and of visual perception. And that's why they have no context in which to make sense of the visual data entering into their eyes. It is only when they touch with their hands, oh, okay, this is a hammer. Okay, this is what a hammer looks like. So we don't see just with our eyes. We see with the intelligence that enables us to make sense of what we see. And the same principle applies to the spiritual quest. So anybody who tries to prayerfully meditate, anyone who tries to devotionally sing the mantra, the Maha Mantra which we sing, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Anyone who does this, that person will experience something special. Experience some feeling of relief, some feeling of joy, some feeling of upliftment. Now, that experience will be there, but unless we have a philosophical context, we will not be able to make sense of it. Okay, I went to a temple, I danced, I sang, I felt good. Okay, fine, let me go on with my life. But if we have a philosophical context, then we will understand that this experience which we had is actually an experience of spiritual love. And just as if we get the intelligence, then we can make sense of what we are seeing with our eyes. Similarly, when we study the spiritual wisdom, so the sound, spiritual sound of mantras acts like an elevator for our consciousness. It helps us gain relief and release from whatever stress and burden we may be having in life. But why are we getting it? How can we replicate it? How can we make it a sustainable relief and release? All that, if we are to understand and experience, we need a philosophical context. And that is what the Bhagavad Gita offers. So the Bhagavad Gita tells Arjuna that don't bother too much about whether you should fight or you should not fight. Understand your nature and act according to your nature. So at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna responds, now Krishna is the speaker in the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna finishes speaking in 18.72. And Krishna finishes with a question. He asks, so Arjuna, have you understood what I have spoken? He says, kachideta chutam partha tvayeka grena chetasa kachidagyana sammoha pranashtaste dhaninjaya. Have you understood? Has your illusion gone? And Arjuna does not respond, yes, I am going to fight now. His response is, karishye vachanam tava, I will do your will. He is not concerned whether he is going to fight or not. The act of fighting is incidental. The important principle he has learned is to live in harmony with the divine will. I will do your will. So that harmonizing with our higher nature, which is actually a spiritual nature, which links in love with Krishna, with God, that is the universal message. We are not warriors, we are not going to fight wars in a physical sense. But we all have to fight wars inside us. Now there are negative thought patterns, there are self-defeating inner dialogues that go on inside us. If we look at ourselves, we'll find that often there is a voice within which sabotages us. We start doing something good and the voice starts saying, you will never be able to do anything. Suppose somebody is carrying a glass of water and you slip and the glass of water spills. Okay, the glass of water spills, just clean it. But there's a voice which says, you are a careless buffoon. And okay, if we just are not able, we go for an interview and we're not able to pass the interview, this voice says, you are never going to do anything in life. Okay. From one mistake to a whole judgment about one's life. This is how this inner voice sabotages us. So we all have to fight battles against these negativity that are inside us. Mana shashthani indriyani prakritisthani karshati. The Bhagavad Gita says that we all are fighting with our own minds and struggling against it. So when we learn to harmonize with the divine will, just as Arjuna got empowered to fight and eventually he attained victory. Similarly, the spiritual wisdom of the Bhagavad Gita can empower each one of us in our inner battles and move forwards towards victory. I'll summarize. I started by talking about how the Bhagavad Gita's universal appeal is not because it is a manual for a warrior to fight, but rather it is a address to the universal question, what am I meant to do in life? And the Bhagavad Gita says this, act according to one's nature. So what are we meant to do? Panchatattva Bhagavan ki jai. So what am I meant to do in life? And it begins by telling us that when we are facing a lose-lose situation, I explained how with respect to lose-lose situations, now if we can climb up, like the 10 people who climbed the 100th story but forgot the key downstairs, we can climb up to success in various aspects of our life. But if we do not have inner happiness, then our external successes will be hollow and unproductive. And we see this in terms of, say, we have guided missiles, but misguided men. So, what does it mean to have inner, to be able to find inner happiness? That firstly means understanding our spiritual identity. If we don't understand our spiritual identity, then we take externals too seriously. Just like, say, cricket fans committing suicide because their favorite team lost the match. Or a person watching a, say, playing a video game and seeing a car driver falling into a death and person getting a traumatic shock. That is all caused by excessive misidentification. So the Bhagavad Gita says, when we let the world have monopoly over our attention, monopoly over our consciousness, then we get battered by the ups and downs of the world. But if we understand our spiritual identity, then we can hold on to our perspective and respond maturely to life's ups and downs. So the inner satisfaction is like, for a person who wants to dance, it's a good dancing floor. So if we have inner satisfaction, whatever we want to perform in life, we'll be able to do it better. And that inner satisfaction comes when we understand and experience our spiritual identity. So when we understand that we as souls are indestructible, then we become airlifted above the agitating circumstances of life. So that we can be concerned but not disturbed. And then I explained towards the end of the Bhagavad Gita how the Bhagavad Gita it concludes not so much with a rejection of the world, but connection with a higher reality. So Arjuna, who had become disheartened, he became encouraged once again. Similarly, we may become disheartened in life, but we understand life's spiritual wisdom, our own spiritual side, then we will become reheartened. And especially if we understand our spiritual relationship with God, with Krishna, and we understand the unflinching nature of His love, and we experience the higher happiness that comes by connecting with Him. Say the mantra is like an elevator for our consciousness. And we will experience relief and release by chanting these mantras. But just as a person needs not just eyes to see, but intelligence to make sense of what is entering into the eyes. Similarly, when we experience something good by chanting the mantras, if we have a philosophical understanding, what is it that I am experiencing? Then the study of the Bhagavad Gita, the understanding of the Bhagavad Gita will become sustainably transformational. It will elevate us to experience reality at a higher level of life, experience life at a higher level of consciousness. And as Arjuna, when he was combined with Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita concludes the image that he was victorious. So similarly, whatever battles we face, we especially face battles with the negative self-sabotaging voices within us. We'll be able to overcome those voices, we'll be able to win our inner battles and attain outer victories too. So thank you very much. Are there any questions? Hare Krishna.